And we're live. Okay, well, you are on screen. Sorry, I just promised you'd be off screen. But anyway, yo, how are you? Okay, guys. Hello, and thank you, everyone, for joining me this evening and Liana on the Nursebreak's 8th ever live Q&A. I'm Jackson. I'll be taking you through this interview. And if you haven't joined us before, welcome. It's awesome to have you on board and watching along. The Nursebreak is a platform for Aussie nurses and other health professionals and students to share awesome insights into their careers and promote interprofessional learning. If you're watching this live right now on Facebook, make sure to post your comments and questions in the comments just below in the chat as you watch along or right now, and we might ask them live. I'd also love to know where you guys are listening from. Where in Australia or out of Australia are you listening from? And are you a nurse or student? So it'd be interesting to pop those down in the comments. Today, I'm joined by the lovely Liana, who is a New Zealand-trained registered nurse, now working down under, and she's got more than 10 years experience in ED, primary care, and rural and remote agency nursing. So initially from the largest ED in Australasia, with more than 400 presentations a day to ED, she moved to rural and remote hospitals and clinics in Australia, where at times she may not have actually seen anybody for days. And currently, Liana is based in the beautiful Atherton Tablelands of far north Queensland. She's worked in North New South Wales, Queensland, from the top end of the Gulf and down to southwest New South Wales. So, Liana, awesome to have you on board. I am super, super excited to dig into this conversation.
Yeah, ready to go.
Let's do it. Where are you? Where are we interviewing you from at the moment? Where are you at the moment?
I'm at home in Atherton at the moment.
I went there for the first time in my life last November. Very cool region. I'd suggest everyone go there.
It's kind of like a mini New Zealand. Like it's, I feel like
better,
it's mini,
right?
New Zealand.
But better. You have to be careful what we say here, hey? Okay, so my first question is actually just literally, what is your favourite part of Australia so far?
It depends on, like, do you mean, like, home, obviously. I'm trying to think of, like whereabouts. Whitsundays, absolutely love them. Went there first week of school holidays. Fantastic. Nice. I was thinking like in terms of work, but I was like, I've actually like holidayed around a bit of Australia now. So yeah.
That's cool. So tell us sort of, how did you get into nursing firstly back in New Zealand?
I was about 16 and having that like, what do I want to do with my life? And I'd been unwell and had a couple of surgeries, and I'd had like some really terrible nurses. And I had one really nice one, and I kind of never forgot it. And from then on, I was just like, oh. Like I was along the health kind of line of things, like paramedic, that sort of thing. And I was like, nursing. Yeah, like I'm not from one of those families that has the long line of nurses or anything like that. But it just kind of happened that way.
And now we're here. So what is your current role? What are you currently doing with yourself?
Right now I'm fine employed. I'm in between contracts. making jam. Making so much jam. Strawberry rhubarb, rosé and dragon fruit's the favourite.
Send me some.
Yeah, it's on the list. I'm actually taking a little bit of time out for like the mental health as well. Like with COVID and everything, obviously not being able to get back to New Zealand, see the family and like, it's been a bit rough, and I've been doing quite back-to-back-to-back contracts, which I don't usually do. And you get really run down. So I thought, why not take some time off and make some jam?
Okay.
So here I am making jam.
Making jam. Jam. I love rhubarb, so feel free to hit some my way. So we got into nursing. We did some New Zealand nursing. You came to Australia. So what inspired you to move towards rural and remote nursing?
The agency and rural and remote were kind of hand in hand for me. I never saw them as different. Like I never saw myself coming to Australia to do metropolitan nursing. Where I worked, there used to be a sort of, not a program, but it was sort of like okay with the management for senior nurses to take 3 months off to go to Australia to do outback nursing and then come back with like a house deposit or, you know, money for a wedding or whatever. Mm. And yeah, I got talking to one of the girls like just before handover one day, and I think like, you know, when someone hits you with something at the right point, and it just kind of like sat there with me. I was like, oh, rural and remote agency. And yeah, it kind of just grew from there, and here I am years later, still here.
That's awesome. So there's quite a few people watching, but we're going to cover like all the things that I would want to know if I was going to be a rural and remote nurse, which at some point I will be doing. So the questions throughout this interview are going to sort of be quite practical, everything from what are we packing to how to choose an agency to the day in the life, the crazy things you might see. Before we do all that, the way I found you was, I don't entirely know how I came across the video, but you were interviewed in New Zealand on, I think, National New Zealand TV. About your transition from Australia to New Zealand. Sorry, wow, the other way around, from New Zealand to Australia. And you talked about quite a few differences. So let's sort of talk, can you talk about how that happened and how that became about?
That happened, an agency that one of my girlfriends was with had been approached by John Campbell, who's a interviewer in New Zealand. And he came across an ad for agency nurses and they were advertising the pay rate. And he was like, surely this isn't accurate. And so he contacted them and it kind of grew from there. And so they were looking for someone to speak with him. And she put my name forward. I'm not with that agency, but it was through them. It unfolded really quickly. It went from like, I think I had like a few days notice of the whole thing. And it was at 5:30 in the morning, my time, like in between a run of morning shifts. So like, I feel like as awkward as it is to look back on that kind of thing, like I feel like it didn't go too badly.
Yeah. And when I was watching it, I was like, I don't know how many nurses probably would have watched this, but you had some really interesting points. Some of those points sort of evolved around the differences between Australia and New Zealand in regards to working conditions, pay, nurse autonomy, scope of practice ratios. What would you say are some of the biggest differences between Australia and New Zealand in regards to nursing?
In that interview, I was really, really passionate about the differences in the roles and responsibilities of New Zealand to Australian nursing. Mm. But that being said, I haven't done much metropolitan Australian nursing, so I don't know if it would be a little bit different. But say in the emergency department I was in, patient comes in, you take their bloods and send them off and you add the appropriate extra tests you think are needed. Take their ECG like everyone does. You order x-rays, you administer through different pathways, whatever medication is appropriate. Mm. And for a lot of patients, they're actually treated before the doctor gets to see them, or they have all the information readily available for when they are ready to see them. Mm. And it's like, I know there are some places in Australia that are doing the pathways, like your urinary pathway or
like a chest pain pathway.
Yeah, hyperemesis pathway, like under that in New Zealand, you can give a bag of fluids, you can give IV antiemetic, like it's all that kind of stuff that, you know, it's, you're just treating the patient and not delaying care, and it leads to faster discharges, better outcomes for the patient, that sort of stuff, better flow through the department, which I know managers like. And I found that in a lot of rural and remote areas, that's not so much the case. There's one health district I've worked in that's very restrictive on what you can do as a nurse. It's very patriarchal. Yes, doctor, no doctor, three bags full doctor. And you really have no autonomy at all. So I find that difference really striking. And then you bring the pay into it. Yeah. And, you know, those little busy nurses in New Zealand that are working their bums off and using all their clinical skills and judgment are getting, you know, not a lot. Yeah, compared to, like, being in this certain health district where I was told I couldn't even nurse initiate Panadol, but yet I'm, you know, much better reimbursed. So it just, that's a really striking difference for me. But just in general, like, I find Australia very much more patriarchal when it comes to medical care.
Okay, that's interesting. Where I work, nurses can do a lot of those things you mentioned. There's a few things that they can't. But we have nurse practitioners who that's that next level, that next level. So there were some other differences about ratios in New Zealand. What's the ratios like in New Zealand?
It depends on where you work and what time of day it is and what area of the department. I look like a shop for this, but there's there were a lot of times in like the main part of the department where I think I can't remember if there's 24 or 25 26 beds, but you come on in the morning and you've got your one team leader who doesn't really do patient care, so they coordinate, and you've got two floor nurses, so it's like 11 12 13 bed spaces each. Until 11 o'clock when more staff would come on. This was years ago, so it may have changed since then. I really hope it has. Even in the other areas of the department, you have like 8 acute patients. We're like, I haven't had that anywhere in Australia yet. One place. But like the ratios seem like really set. Like people are really clear on the ratios, and there's like escalation procedures for if you go over that. Which is amazing.
Okay. We could probably talk about the differences for days. So let's get into rural and remote nursing. So let's start with, how does one become a rural and remote agency nurse?
You join an agency. I didn't have any rural and remote experience coming into my first place in Australia. I had acute metropolitan experience, which was enough to get me in the door. And that's what I would suggest for anyone going out rural or remote, is having some form of acute background. Because no matter where you are, people get really sick. And if you can't manage a really sick patient, or you can't recognize a deteriorating patient, you're in trouble. So I would recommend that. But that, I mean, coming from that background into like my first place was like, I think the quietest place in Australia. I think I went 16 days without any acute presentations. So from like 400 a day to none. But having those skills and that background and that knowledge of when it hits the fan, you've got skills to fall back on.
Would you say there are particular skills that like agencies are looking for, or like the rural and remote communities really do need?
Yeah, triaging, super important. There are a lot of places in Queensland that will train permanent staff on triage through like an online course, but it's so different from being in a big hospital where you've got double lines out the door and your skills are fantastic, like coming away from that, then yeah, you have the confidence to be able to recognise, you know. That being said, rural and remote triage sometimes is a lot different. Like you have ones and twos and fours and fives, threes are not really a thing. But good triage skills, resus skills, people do get really, really sick, and you need to have those resus skills there. There's a big checklist of acronyms that facilities normally like you to have. REC, the Rural Emergency Care. Your advanced life support, I think that pediatric advanced life support, some places like TNCC, some like...
which is the trauma nurse core course.
And some of them like immunizations and sexual health and all that sort of thing. But again, it depends on where you're going and what the requirement for that community is.
So the requirement isn't always just an ED, ICU background. You could be a ward nurse, or you could be... Could you be a mental health nurse? Could you just be a midwife?
Oh, just a midwife, mate. They're amazing. They save my bum.
I take that back.
Coming from acute, I only look at the acute places, but there are a lot of really small places that need renal nurses because, Lord forbid, there is a lot of renal issues out in the communities. A lot of midwife placements and mental health, absolutely. I've seen so many advertisements for mental health nurses. So at ward nursing, there are smaller places that do have the wards and have that aged care component, but you need to be flexible to be able to work in the emergency department as well. So for ward nurses that were considering going out rural and remote as agency, like as permanent, it's a bit different because I think they train you a little bit more, I would hope. But just trying to even get on the casual pool and try and get like a bit more of that acute experience, perfect. Like you've got the skills ready to go.
Awesome. So the next question was sort of about scope of practice. This is obviously going to depend for every person and, you know, the skills they have already and so on. Did you find when rural and remote with less resources and less doctors and so on that your scope of practice was widened? You're doing more things and you can upskill through the agency, for example, or?
In some health, it depends on the health district. There is the one I keep thinking of, really ties your hands and it doesn't recognize any of your prior knowledge and prior skills going into that whole area. So you can have a background in immunizations or casting or what have you, you're not allowed to use those skills. Okay. So weirdly, in some areas it's quite opposite, but in other areas it's absolutely welcomed. And for the doctors especially, a lot of these towns have one doctor, and if they're on fatigue or, you know, if they've been on all day, they don't want to come in, you know, for something that you could easily take care of, why not put a cast on if you're trained in that? It depends on where you go.
Okay, sure. I think you sort of also touched on the general expectations. So how would someone go about picking an agency to work with? What things are we looking for? What are we steering away from?
I applied for a few agencies when I was first looking, and I found like the interaction from some of them just like, I'd already come from a really big hospital where I was just a number, and I wasn't really looking forward to being another number for someone else. I joined my agency from what a girlfriend had told me about them. And she was like, you have to go with these guys. They're great. Mm. These are the reasons why. So for me, I like that kind of, you're able to interact with your agent. It's not just a, you know, they ring you every 6 months sort of thing. It's like an ongoing relationship. It depends on what you're looking for, because there are some other agencies that service different areas. Mm. Some of them get views of other contracts that aren't available to some other agencies. So it's kind of, it varies. Mm. But I went with mine because I kind of wanted that like family feel, which is awesome.
Okay, because I'm looking at the comments here. There's a few ones. There's HCA. There's Nurse at Call, who you work for. And Paul, my God, sorry. I don't know why I said just a midwife. I honestly don't know why I said that. I'm going to have to be one myself at some point. I want to do rural and remote. Absolute legends. Okay, so there's a few different agencies that people are putting down. Looks like you've got a few followers here, Liana. We've got Liana is one of the best by Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
And there's a whole bunch of people saying hello from where they're from. So, guys, if you have any questions for Liana, just put them down in the comments. So, my next question is about travel, accommodation, and we're going sideways. And living expenses. So, what's the deal with travel? Is your travel costs covered? How do you get to your contracts?
That again depends on your agency for what they cover, and it varies on the amount of time that you are going to work for. So if it's under, I think 12 weeks, less is covered. If it's over 12, more is covered. But again, it varies from agency to agency. I think some of them give you like a certain voucher or like a certain amount you're allowed to spend for travel. My agency takes care of my travel, so for the most part I don't need to organize anything myself, which is fantastic. That being said, I will go on and like if I'm flying somewhere, I'll jump on Skyscanner and I'm like, what's the best flight? Can I spend some time in Brisbane and go shopping? Like, you make it work for you. But the accommodation usually is covered. Yeah, like I've never had to pay for accommodation as yet.
What type of accommodation do you get put up normally? What's your best accommodation? Give me your worst accommodation you've had.
Oh, the worst is kind of divvied up between like a room covered in black mold with a light bulb on the ceiling doesn't work, and there's like a big divot in the bed. versus like no air con and it's like mid-30s, high-30s. Where is that? The best, a little town in New South Wales that had a house kind of just off the hospital site, and I had Wi-Fi, and it was like a
Oh,
nice like
perfect.
two-bedroom house and like a new kitchen and a lounge. It just like it was like a proper house, which is just
So good.
Wi-Fi, such a good thing.
So good. We were planning to do this interview a while ago, but because you're all over the place, you're in little remote places, you're on islands, it was a bit difficult. So I'm glad we've caught you with some Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Now, once again, like every question, it really depends where you work, which agency, but generally for you, I've got a few questions. What are the hours like? What are your rosterings like? How long do your contracts go for? And you're currently unemployed, but how much work is available? So let's start with what are your sort of hours like?
Some well, I do you do full time as agency, you're 40 hours a week. The rostering depends on the facility. Some places are really strong in doing late earlies, back to back to back to back to back. There's been a few places that have refused to put me on night shift because it means I'm in charge of the hospital and they don't know me, they don't know my skill set. So it just meant I had like 6 weeks of no night shifts. Fine with that. It varies. There's Yeah, some places are much better at rostering than others. Some places are absolutely shocking, and I would actually say unsafe. But again, it depends on where you are. But I mean, it's your same shifts as everywhere else. Some places do 10-hour nights, some do 8 hours.
So
But yeah, it's just.
let's say you get, contracted for 4 weeks in XYZ hospital or clinic. Do your shifts come through your agency or do you have a point of contact in that health service who then sort of liaise with?
The agency will give me usually the first few days of the roster, and then I mean it's in the facility, like in the roster book.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long do your contracts normally go for in your experience?
The shortest I've done is 3 weeks. No, I did 2 weeks once. And I've just signed on for 16 weeks, which is the longest contract I've actually ever committed to. So a little bit excited about that. But normally for me, I would go, usually the maximum would be 8 weeks. And then if I like it, extend further, or if I can extend.
Okay. And what type of places have you been put in currently? In your so you've done 20 contracts, I believe, with Nurse at Call.
Oh.
Are they Nurse at Call on their Facebook page said she's done 20 contracts, so that's the reason I know that. Which might sound a lot to you, I'm not sure. But what are some places you've been doing these 20 contracts at?
Like I've been kind of all over the shop. A couple of places down New South Wales. Bathurst, I absolutely loved it. What a great place. Like it's definitely not remote, but it is still rural. Fantastic people and a cool little town. Where else is, like up in the Cape and up in the Gulf, a couple of places up there. Around in the Atherton Tablelands as well, down central Queensland. Yeah, kind of all over the place.
So you're sort of filling in
Yeah.
for contracts like maternity leaves and, a staff sick or what sort of things are you feel are you filling in a what gaps are you filling in these services normally?
For a lot of what a number of these places are really hard to get permanent staff. So when they lose someone, it's such a process to be able to get someone new in, and they have to fit the hospital. So a lot of times it's filling in for just non-existent staff, filling gaps in the roster. There have been quite a few maternity leaves, but for the most part, they're in the recruitment process to try and get permanent staff. Or for whatever reason, like people go on like long service leave or whatever. Yeah, just that.
Yeah, I guess with COVID as well, that sort of puts a spanner in the works. Have you experienced that? Sort of, has COVID reduced your work at some points, or did it give you more work? Or
at the moment, because obviously the borders are closed for everyone. Like, it's Queensland jobs for Queensland nurses, and I saw a job list come through today, and they're not just for Queensland, for a number of other states as well, but it's massive. At the start of COVID, there were not many jobs going. Everyone was staying put, staying where they were. So there was a real fear, and everyone extended for that purpose, that they were afraid they wouldn't get work anywhere else. I haven't actually really struggled to get any more contracts. I had a short turnaround recently of like 4 or 5 days between contracts. So it's there is the work there. There's definitely the demand for agency to come and fill in.
Yep. Okay. My next question is, okay, so you got a job. What are you going to pack? What are your essentials? What's your must-haves and your must-nots?
It depends on what airline you're flying with. Honestly, Regional Express. Some tickets, and I've already spoken to my travel girl about this once. It gives you a maximum of 15 kilos. So depending on how long you're going away for, you have to pack your whole life in 15 kilos. You can try. I've found ways around it.
Please tell me.
No, because then more people will do it, they don't want to be able to do it. So it's figuring out really what you do and don't need and how long you're going for. Like, if you're going for a long period of time, then just mail yourself stuff. I just sent some stuff up into the Gulf today, and I think it was like $12 for a couple of kilos. So you can send yourself stuff if you think you're really going to be missing it. For me, like over a week's worth of undies, because usually you have a washing machine where you are, so you can wash them in scrubs, like really minimal casual clothes, like two t-shirts, two bottoms. If you're going remote, where are you really going to go? You're going to go to the pub, if there's a pub. You're not really going to be going anywhere or doing anything, so why pack like a nice going out outfit when you're just going to sit at home? Walking shoes, any sort of like super essentials that you need personally for you. I've started taking like the, I don't call them the rubber bands, but like those exercise bands. Resistance bands, a TRX thing that you can hang off a door. I've weighed a lot of my stuff. I think that's like 2 kilos. So it's it's only if we don't climb reps. Yeah. Food,
yep.
Snacks.
Yep, Tim Tam.
You've got to put them on carry-on.
True.
Vegemite.
You can get that. You don't like Vegemite? Oh, come on.
Marmite.
Nah.
I always start taking snacks with me now because when you're in the remote places, everything costs $1 million. And you don't know what they're actually going to have. So it's just, if you want snacks, take your own snacks.
Are most of the places you're going, like, do you just ride a bike or do you just walk or do you hire a car?
I've hired a car in places where I've been like maybe 3 hours from somewhere where there's shops. Some places I have had a bike. I think I'm up to 3 bikes that I've had now. They're great. Name every one of them. They're fantastic. again, it depends on if it's like a bigger or smaller area. I walk a lot of places. Like 9 times out of 10, you're at least 25 minutes from a shop. So get some sun, put some sunscreen on, go for a nice walk.
Yeah, cool. I guess when you go in rural remote, there's lots of nice things to see outside. Or maybe not. I don't know. Depends where you go.
Another essential that I would say is a good set of knives. Like, not like a full set, but like one or two
knives.
Just really good sharp knives. Yeah. Like, nursing quarters historically don't have a lot of good utensils. It's just great.
Do you have any other things, like apart from knives? Like, do you have like I don't know. What's your? Is there something you always have with you that I might not have thought of?
I have a little pack of herbs and spices that I take with me. And like I put them in their own little individual kind of little sachets to make it easier. I got really sick of buying salt and pepper and herbs and spices everywhere I went. And it's just annoying. So I started taking my own little pack.
That's such a good idea. I love that. Is it Tuscan herbs? You just get a mixed herbs and then you're set?
Oh, yeah. Like you get your mixed Italian herbs. I've got like oregano and cumin. Yeah.
So good. So little good. Things. We'll keep going, but I've got a few questions coming in. So everyone who's watching, if you have any questions at all, chuck them in the comments. So Luke has asked, and I don't know if this is not, this is sort of a bit separate to what we're talking about, but do you find that banks are okay with you working agency? And I'm thinking when applying for home loans, et cetera, have you experienced this?
I have. In New Zealand, I was applying for a credit card and like even when I was still working over here and they will not give me one. And I was sort of like, but I'm making a lot of money. Why would you not do this? They see it as it's not secure. I'm not sure about home loans. And I would really look into that and have a discussion with them first because you are in a way self-employed by contracting. And it's, it definitely is an issue. I was initially told that I needed to be contracting for 2 years before they would consider me for a credit card. So I went back to them after 2 years and they've said no. It needs to be 2 years in New Zealand. So that's my fault.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess, Luke, good question. I guess we have to ask the home loan people. But yeah, that's the tricky one, isn't it? Because if your entire, you know, 5+ years is rural and remote, then you can be in a bit of a pickle. And Lou has asked, have you ever had to leave a contract early?
I've considered it, but I don't. I would be really disappointed in myself if I did leave a contract early. And I have met quite a few people that have, and for absolutely reasons that they should have. But no, there has been a few times where I've considered it. But just kind of stuck through and got to the end and
Okay. And not a question, but a statement. Mary has said, I've just completed a contract in New South Wales and I was suturing and putting on black slabs. The doctor was only on call for ones and twos, but otherwise we used COSOPs with RAMS. Do you know what can you explain COSOPs with RAMS? Or are you not sure?
There's acronyms that I'm not 100% on.
Something scope of, it'll be standard orders or something, but I'm not sure what RAMS is. So, Mary, if you want to chuck down in the comments what those acronyms mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there are places that will let you do all these things, and then there are places that won't. So it depends on where you are. But absolutely, like if you have those skills and they're happy for you to do it, then get on in and do it. Otherwise, you lose those skills.
We had a nurse ask through the Nurse Break Facebook group, Australian nursing, if it was in her scope of practice as a paed nurse to do IOs, intraosseous access for peds. And there was a lot of, there was quite a few nurses who was like, yeah, it is in our scope and I'm a rural remote nurse and I put IOs in. So I guess it's going to be area dependent what your skill base is, but I guess the scopes can be quite wide or they can be quite narrow. So interesting.
Yeah, it depends on your local policies and procedures.
Yeah. Okay, so you've arrived in a new facility, a little clinic, a hospital. What do you do to orient yourself and how do you sort of acclimatize, you know, for 16 weeks? What are you going to do when you first get there?
Usually, like, when I first get to a contract, I've been traveling for a couple of days. I think the longest was 3 days. I have a shower because it's sitting in airports all day is not fun. And I go food shopping if the food shop's open. Like if you get somewhere on a Sunday, chances are the shop's not open. But I find that's the best way to kind of set yourself up is at least to have your food shop done. I'm really bad at unpacking. I'll leave my suitcase on the ground with like my stuff kind of out of it for weeks. But yeah, shower and food shop. everything's already packed. Weird.
Okay, that makes sense. I know we're speeding through these, but we've got heaps to go through. So can you, there's no such thing as a typical day, I guess, in your world, but can you sort of walk us through a typical or atypical day? We've gone through the second part, which was what kinds of facilities do you work in? So you've worked in like two nurse sort of facilities and you've worked in little local hospitals. Is that correct?
Yeah. The way that works for me is just because when I choose a place to go to, I like to have a gym. That's just my own personal preference. And I find a lot of the very smaller, small clinics don't have that. And it's personal preference. Like, I would love to be able to go up to some of these really small clinics and stuff, but like for my mental health and general well-being, like I prefer there to be a gym. So typically a lot of facilities will have either two RNs on or you're on with an EN or an AIN. Sometimes there's three of you, depending on the facility. But, yeah. Typical day. Checks. Start off doing the checks. And then just carrying on with your day, depending on where it is. Some places, because when you're in metropolitan areas and someone passes away, you see them off to the, well, they get taken to the morgue from the wardy. But when you're in rural remote, you have to go and check the morgue. You have to check the temperatures and make sure that it's not too cold. So that's something that, like, someone wouldn't normally think about before you go out to those places. But
what temperature does a morgue need to be?
I think it can't be less than like -2 and it can't be more than like 6. Not sure. In one of my recent ones, the aircon frosted over, so it heated up and we had to defrost the morgue.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So my next question is, I've got a few sort of similar but not so similar. What has been your most challenging remote role so far? As in, like, which contract have you had where you might have been working? So you don't just work ED, you work the wards, you work aged care. Which role have you been like, wow, this is really difficult, I'm struggling?
There was one a few years ago where it was advertised as ED, but I think I did 2 ED shifts in 5 weeks and the rest was on the ward. And the ward was a lot of aged care patients waiting for placement, and over half of them were morbidly obese, and it was not great staffing. So by the end of every shift, your back was aching from like doing bed rolls, and it just physically it was exhausting. And I felt really sort of frustrated at the fact that, you know, my background is not ward nursing, and there's a lot of paperwork involved, and there's certain things that you need to do right, and it can take a while to get used to it. Like, all credit to ward nurses, that paperwork is insane. So I find that really difficult, and people are quite quick to pick apart when you haven't done something, and you know, it's just like, I've not done this, like, this is brand new for me. I mean, other places have been challenging in their own right, whether or not you've had some challenging staff or like the location itself is really challenging. Like, there have been some that have, just from their location alone, been quite hard, being so isolated. Depends.
Do you find you're mostly welcomed when you sort of arrive at facilities, or have you, because in metro, sometimes the agency nurses can feel a little bit isolated in a metro environment on the ward. So have you felt welcomed?
Mostly. I think people recognise that you're there to fill in spots so that they're not short staffed, so they don't need to do double shifts. And mostly, there have been the odd occasion where, you know, whether or not just because you're agency, because I'm young, but for the most part, people have been really good.
Well, that's good to hear. Mary has sort of gone through. So COSOPs is the critical operations standard operating procedures. Mary says, RAMS should be RMCS, which stands for Remote Medical Consultation Service. Thank you for that, Mary. Joy, who was actually a lecturer of mine at uni, Dr. Joy Penman. How did rural and remote community members differ from urban community members? And what about the differences in health profiles of communities?
Depends on which community you're in, but the last few communities I've been in that have been quite sort of remote. People in more urban areas have more access to healthcare. They have their access to specialists and all that sort of stuff. They can get regularly reviewed and seen. A lot of remote and rural communities are incredibly unhealthy. That being said, that's what I'm seeing. The picture of what you see when you go into a community is the sick people, because that's who presents to you. So there can be a really well part of the community that you're not seeing because they don't need to come in. So it can give you a really skewed view on a community. But your rheumatic heart disease, diabetes, renal failure, all those things are rampant. And I just find the incidence of it much more higher in those rural and remote areas than I ever found in a urban environment.
Okay. We'll go into this a bit more in a sec. Let me just get rid of that question off the screen. So great questions, guys. Thanks, Joy, for that question. That was a really good question.
Yeah.
It's a deep question that goes to lots of different levels. I'm sure we could go into a bit more. So what are some sort of traumatic or difficult or unique clinical presentations that you have experienced?
It varies from place to place. There's been some instances with with mental health especially. Obviously with your quite psychotic people in the community, and it's you and one other nurse, and there's no mental health nurse either on that week or at all, and trying to manage them with the doctor, getting them ready for retrieval. If they are really, really, really unwell like that, you sedate them and RFDS will come pick them up. But not only that, just the access to mental health services in some of these rural and remote communities it must be a really underfunded area. There have been a few times that I've left a shift in tears at people not getting the help they need. And it's so difficult because, as a health professional, they really need access to these services and it's not there. And, I really, really struggle with that. There's been a few incidences recently where I'm just like, this is insane. In a larger area, they would have access. They'd be seen, they'd be treated. But when you're rural and remote, it's much more easier for video conferences and for them to say, oh, well, discharge your safety plan. In reality, that safety plan's not very safe. So that's a bit of a struggle. I'm trying to think of just other sort of appropriate things. yeah. I think a lot of it is it depends on your community. Some communities have no insight into health, and it can be really distressing, especially when they come in with children. There's a lot that you don't really talk about, you don't see, that you see, but people don't really talk about it. There's a lot of neglect that you do see in rural and remote. You'll see it in urban as well, and I have seen it over the years, but not on the level that I've seen it in rural and remote.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, no, that makes sense. Before you came to Australia, because now Dr. Joy, who asked that previous question, so I didn't even know she's going to ask that, but great question. She has a big focus on Aboriginal Indigenous health. Did you have much training before coming to Australia on Indigenous health? Or does your agency provide any? None. Okay.
None. Learn on the job.
Have you had a little bit since? Or you learn on the job? Okay.
One of those online modules where it's cultural sensitivity and cultural safety. But other than that, no.
Yeah, I guess you learn it. You can learn on the job quite on the cold face.
Yeah, you learn according to your community as well, but nothing really prepares you for going into those kind of communities.
Okay. What's the most eye-opening thing? So you sort of touched on this, but what's the most eye-opening thing that you've experienced or seen while working remotely?
Oh, that's a good one. In terms of like healthcare or communities or?
Let's go in terms of, let's go in terms of just like what shocked one, you.
But I don't know.
Yeah, let's do it.
The amount of medical fraud.
Sorry?
Medical fraud shocked me. Medical fraud.
Medical fraud.
Mm.
Please elaborate.
Yeah. Obviously in remote communities, if you are unwell, you get flown out by RFDS, depending on the accepting hospital. It's a real touchy thing, and I feel like I'm going to offend some people by like going into it, but like people trying to get escorts to come with them that aren't appropriate, like trying to get children to come with them as medical escorts, and people buying one-way tickets to certain places when they have like really specific health needs that need to be met in larger areas, and knowing full well that they're going to a place that doesn't provide those services. It's really frustrating, because obviously when they become unwell and they need those health needs met, they need to be medically retrieved. So I find just the amount of medical fraud, I don't know if you call it medical fraud, but it definitely is a manipulation of the system, and it's very, very frustrating to see.
So you've mentioned the Royal Flying Doctors, well, retrieval a bit. So for a lot of these patients, as a rural remote nurse, you would need to know how to package a patient up or prepare them for air medical evacuation. So can you touch on some of the sort of things involved in that?
Yeah, thanks to my recent rec course, it was a good refresher. But essentially,
what's rec stand for?
Remote emergency care.
Yep.
Through Krana, rec course. It's getting them ready for a flight, so it's making sure that they're comfortable, they've got pain relief on board. A lot of times, the RFDS will ask for an antiemetic to be given. They need an IDC in. Getting all the paperwork done. A lot of times you don't actually realise that they've already hit the tarmac and the ambulance turns up to pick up your patient, to take them to the airport, and you're not ready. that has happened a number of times. So it's a rush to get all the paperwork done. But most of it is paperwork and just basic patient needs, making sure they've gone to the toilet, if they don't have an IDC in, they've eaten, if they can eat, or if they're being starved for surgery.
And what type of patients over your years of doing this have you had to send by plane? Some examples.
A mix of everything. Like a mix from mental health, compound fractures, traumas. I had a couple of people come with motorbikes that have gone. Sometimes it's not really, really sick people, but it's someone that needs specialist care that we can't provide, like CT scans and all that kind of stuff. Like even a renal colic, like an unmanaged renal colic will get sent out so they can have a CTKEV. It can range from like kind of okay to really, really unwell.
And when you're in these clinics and facilities and with only, you know, maybe an AIN or an EN and a doctor on call, maybe not, and you have a trauma patient come in or you have someone in acute pain, sort of how do you manage that? Are the standards, how does that get managed? Like they've arrived at the door, what's the next step sort of thing in your book?
I call for letting the doctor know that you've got someone through with X, Y, Z, and they need to, you know, finish their dinner, put their pants on, whatever, come into the clinic. If it looks quite bad, it's calling in your on-call staff and just getting into it. It depends on what it is. Like a lot of times you can manage with three-ish staff, but again, it depends on what comes in the door. Like if they need to be intubated or whatever, you want as many hands as you can get.
Yeah.
But it depends on your staffing.
Okay. And the next question I had on my list was about culture shock, but you sort of touched on that. So do you have anything else you'd want to touch on sort of even just coming from New Zealand to Australia, what were you like, wow?
It's like, what's an Erik Kenji?
Wait, say that again.
Oh, What's an Erokanji? That was one of, like, I went to
What
a
is an
coastal
Erokanji?
place.
You mean the jellyfish?
No, I don't know what that was.
Oh, right, okay.
They don't have those in New Zealand. Yeah, and like dealing with snake bites, like it's such this, like, oh, snake bite. It's really not that exciting when you actually like deal with them. Little things like that. That being said, like people experience culture shock differently. In a place I was in earlier this year, there was another agency nurse that was horrified at the accommodation and it was inhumane and this and that and what have you, where I was like, oh, I actually think this is quite nice. This has got an ensuite and everything. So people experience it differently. Yeah, it depends on where you go and sort of what you can adjust to.
Backtracking a little bit. So Mary has said, for anyone who is interested, the TRAN is a
Ooh.
very good educational information in Indigenous health. TRAN stands for Transition to Remote Area Nurse. I've never heard of that. So there we go. And she's also, thank you, Mary, for all your comments. Have you ever done a tarmac handover?
Constantly. The thing with tarmac handovers is usually everything's already been discussed on the phone. So, like most rural and remote nurses have those pictures of the RFDS planes picking up their patient. Like, I was in a kind of competition with a friend about like who could get the most pictures. But yeah, a tarmac handover is basically just an update of whatever's happened in the most sort of recent bit. Since you've last spoken with them, but RFDS will ring for updates on your patient, how stable they are, if you've given any more medications, anything like that. But when they get to you, they already know the story. So it's not like a massive handover. It's more just like, I've done these things since I last spoke to you. Yeah.
Is it normally a nurse who's in the plane, or is it a doctor? Like,
Doctor and nurse and pilot, usually.
you'd hopefully, hopefully, hopefully.
A lot of times they like for those patients they won't come without a doctor. Like you need a doctor.
What do you do when you're not working in some of your communities? What's some things you've got up to?
Depends on where you are. I was recently in a place that we lived in a compound and it wasn't super safe to go out walking. So when someone would get the hospital car, we'd go for little tiki tours and adventures around the place and beaches and all that sort of stuff. So that was really cool and just nice to get out. Go to the gym. Sounds lame, but it's like my mental health. So yeah, obviously now I make a lot of jam. In between shifts, like it depends, because if you're in a place that doesn't do great rostering, a lot of times it's like you would in metro, like sleep, Netflix, eat. Like it's,
Back to work.
yeah, it's not, sometimes there's not a whole lot to do and there's not a lot of like great internet service. So I've started adult coloring in books.
Nice. In some communities, have you ever like ha have you become tried to become part of the community in some of your communities, or done some local things that the locals do in any of the com in any of your contracts?
Like a little bit, not a whole lot though, because it kind of like again, it varies on the community. Like it's more just hanging out with the other like medical staff, to be honest.
Now my next question is about how to people. So I know this is something you're quite passionate about. How
Yeah.
to people. Can you sort of touch on this?
You are going into facilities as a new person. Don't go into new facilities with all these grand ideas of how wherever you came from is so much better than where you are now. The worst thing that you can do going into somewhere is start off with, well, in blah, 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 we did it like blah, blah, blah. No one wants to hear that. You are where you are and you need to adjust to where you are. If something's incredibly unsafe, sure, you can speak up, but, and sometimes it's good to bring it in as a comparison, like, oh, like in a helpful way, but a lot of times it won't be received well. That's just like a little kind of tip going into somewhere is just don't
Tread
aggravate.
slowly.
and stuff. Well, I found this was really helpful in a previous facility, but walking in and saying, oh, well, and blah, 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 we do it like this. I did that the first place I went, and that was a mistake. Shouldn't have done that.
Learn the hard way.
Learn from experience. You need to be flexible where you go. That's the biggest thing about agency work, is being flexible. And you aren't going to small rural and remote areas. These are people's, like, people have been there for 20 plus years in some instances, and you're coming into their territory. So just be a bit more respectful, I guess. Dealing with the locals and with your co-workers, just be mindful and be respectful that you're coming into their territory. Don't back down if something's definitely wrong, but, you know, have a bit of respect.
I think that's really good advice, sound advice, for anyone who's going rural or remote, or just anywhere, really, I guess, to sort of use that advice anywhere. So the good, the bad, what's some of the other challenges? We've touched on quite a few, but is there any other challenges about rural and remote agency nursing?
Travel sometimes. Yeah, definitely some of the travel experiences. Pack spare undies in your carry-on luggage and a toothbrush. I had my luggage lost a number of times. It's not fun. In one place, it took 3 days for me to get my bag, and I actually started my shift within an hour of hitting the ground. Wow. So, yeah, that wasn't. In my last place, actually, my bag, instead of being sent to Emerald, got sent to Adelaide. I got off the bus to the town at 6:30 in the morning, and the manager picked me up, and she opened her boot ready for my bag. I was like, put that down, sister, put that down. You know, going to start work in the hospital and do orientation, not everywhere offers orientation, but a lot of places do, in, like, shorts. Oh, no, I think it was in jeans and a hoodie. And jandals. Sorry, thongs. That's it. Like, everyone's just like, I was like, no bag, no luggage, sorry.
Who is this person you hired?
So it has happened a few times. If you want to put your spare scrubs in your bag, I mean, it's not going to be the end of the world if you don't, but that and some of the shared accommodation, like people eating your food and not cleaning and that sort of stuff.
Okay, so tell me about the shared accommodation. So you're not always in your own little place, is that correct?
Yeah, there are some places that have, like, they're really old school nursing houses that were built in, like, the 30s, 50s kind of thing, like big brick buildings where it's like a small single room and shared bathroom and all that sort of stuff. So obviously, like, a lot of them will have, like, big fridges, and you just kind of put your name on stuff and put it in the fridge, or sometimes you'll have a shelf. I've had food go missing. I've had someone throw out my food because they were a dickhead. Having to carry all your stuff to the bathroom every day because, you know, people are going to use your stuff if you leave it in there. It's kind of like being in a university dorm.
You got to be flexible. You got to be, that's cool. Maybe not so cool,
It's just one of those things that you wouldn't really think of. But, again, those are in, like, the kind of bigger places that have those dorms, but they have, like, students of all different descriptions in there as well.
Okay. Can you do this, you know, rural remote agency nursing with a partner, pet, or family?
You can. I was recently somewhere where there was a nurse that went in a caravan with her partner. They were kind of traveling. I think they're working their way up the country. So they'd stopped in this one place for a couple of months. And, pets, I'm not 100% about, but I have heard of people traveling with their dogs. I have known an agency nurse to travel with her cat. I don't know if the facility knew about it, but it was great for me and great for him. I haven't heard of agency nurses taking their kids. I'm sure it does exist, but I haven't seen it. But it probably is a thing in, like, smaller communities where you can take your family out.
Yeah, I can't remember the Instagram page, but there's a few that I've been in contact with because they're going to write for the nurse break, and they they're a family of four, I think, and they travel Australia in a caravan. And she's a nurse and he's a plumber, I think. So, yeah, how pretty, it's pretty cool. I'm not sure which agency, but, doing the same thing as you, just in a caravan with their kids.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a caravan, you've got your accommodation already with you. It depends on the facility.
No, that's pretty cool. Common misconceptions about agency rule and remote nursing.
That we don't know anything, that we're transferring patients because we don't want to look after them. That second one happens a lot. I've transferred quite a few patients to like larger hospitals and doing the handover, and they just don't want to know. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens quite a lot of the time. But granted, like, I mean, I've been that nurse that gets frustrated at like, oh, another patient, we're already full. But I like to think I was always a bit kinder to someone giving a handover of a patient coming from somewhere else. But yeah, a lot of times it's sort of just like, oh, well, it's quite short. Maybe it's stress. I don't know. But rural remote nurses see some stuff, and they work in facilities that don't have a lot of resources, don't have a lot of access, don't have a lot of staff. So it's like you kind of MacGyver a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Jack of all trades.
Pretty much.
What did you wish you knew before you started in hindsight?
So many bugs. I wish I knew about the bugs. I think in hindsight, and I've only sort of recognized it in the past year or so, that you're going to new places constantly and you're not always going to be everyone's cup of tea. You're not going to get on with everyone. So it's just like having that peace in yourself, like, I'm doing my best, I'm not so bad. And just sort of recognizing that, you know, you're not out there to be best friends with everyone that you come across. Having a bit more confidence.
Yeah.
In that sort of area. I think the first place I ever went, I came to Australia with 12 kilos of luggage, and I wish I just bought a suitcase with a whole lot more stuff. But otherwise, like, it's, yeah. Having that confidence.
Yeah. I've got a question from, I was going to ask this question about courses, but we'll put hers up. Danielle Ryan asks, what education or courses would you recommend for someone looking at remote rural in a few years?
Like, I've only done my first few courses this year, and I'm like just shy 4 years out of rural and remote. But the REC course was really good. I think they are changing it next year. It's going from like 2.5 days down to 2. But jump on the Krana page and have a look. Really, really good. Fantastic. TNCC, the trauma, what is it, trauma nursing care course?
Yep.
TNCC? Yeah. I just know the acronyms. Like that would be, it's all those refreshers that you would use in a metro area, but putting them in a remote setting. But I mean, if you're coming in with your solid background of skills and knowledge, then like you can get away with not having courses. Have your ALS. I think everyone needs ALS these days. I have actually signed on to do my maternity emergency care course next year, because all power to midwives. Like, I'm terrified of catching babies, so I've like identified that weakness in my own knowledge base, so I'm working to improve it. But definitely that RIPEN, I'm not 100% sold on. That's the
rural isolated practice registered nurse, I think, remote nurse.
That's it. The main crux of it is giving you the power to prescribe scheduled medications, but there are a lot of facilities that won't actually let you use it. The bonus is you get immunizations from it, and there are a lot of like the outer islands and all that sort of stuff love you to have immunizations. So it'd be really helpful for that, but it depends on where you're going and what you want to do.
And Deborah asks, is it worth becoming a nurse immunizer?
Yeah. if you're going to the small communities and you're actually working like proper kind of primary care clinics as opposed to like MPHS hospitals or like the small hospitals, because you've got a doctor to do your immunizations for you. But if you are going to those really small clinics, then yeah, have a chat to an agency about it. Like they always recommend that you have as much sort of behind you so that you're like the most suitable applicant. But
yeah. Cool.
Depends on what you want to do.
A few people who've written for me who are remote nurses. If anyone wants to read about remote real nursing on the website, if you go to blog and then the category real and remote, there's some really good content there. And one of it, I think it was Karen's article. She's a remote area nurse, and she, I can't remember the whole list, but there was ALS, REC, MEC, IMS, a course about Indigenous health, nursing immunizer, there was a pharmaco course. Do you know much about that one?
Yeah, I'm kind of considering it in the next few months, but I think it's something that they like you to have, but it's not like a prerequisite.
Yep. Okay, so my next question is about mental health, a bit of a change. So mental health and burnout in remote and rural nursing. You sort of touched on this a little bit and your experiences.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm taking a break now just because like I kind of ran myself to the ground, and that was my own fault. For not sort of, I wanted to work. Like I was quite happy to be working, even though it was like back-to-back hours. Like you got to look after yourself. I think it is really important, especially when you're in these isolated areas. Like, I think that a lot of permanent staff forget that you have no support base. You don't have a family to go home to. You don't have your friends there physically to offload to. So that kind of stuff I think does get forgotten about, that you are actually there on your own, and it can be really challenging. And if you're having issues in the facility, or if you've got personal stuff going on at home, it is really hard because you don't have, like, you can't go around to someone's house and have a big offload unless you've made some good friends in the facility. Like anything that you can do to keep your mental health like sane, then absolutely. Unless it's gin in a dry area, then
maybe you can teach everybody how to make jam, and then we can all do that as well. Sounds therapeutic and tasty.
We're good.
Now you wrote an article. I've got very few questions left, but you wrote an article for the Nurse Break about Preceptrin, and it's actually one of my favorite articles on that I recommend most grads to read, actually, because it sort of gives the perspective of the person who's trying to precept to them. Can you talk about why you're passionate about Preceptrin and sort of why you chose that to be a topic to write for the Nurse Break?
The children are our future. it's I mean, at the end of the day, when the grads are coming up, they're registered nurses. You're handing your patients over to them. Do you want to be handing your patient over to someone that you're not confident is going to take great care of that person? Or that, you know, it kind of comes down to that. And like, I'm absolutely passionate about education. I have let mine slip since I've been rural and remote and feeling quite stagnant and stale, which is why I've started jumping on courses. But I absolutely love preceptoring. I was right into it when I was back in New Zealand. And I think it's something that in rural and remote gets missed quite a lot. And because sometimes there's not that much to show, but like people aren't jumping on board with the sort of teaching as much as, like, there's so many teaching opportunities, and I feel like sometimes it does get missed. But it's just, it's prepping someone to be the best nurse that they can be, as lame as that sounds.
Nursing support when they're young. Yeah, no, it was a really good article. So I would suggest people to go read it. I think if you just type in Liana, it'll pop up. Or if you just go into the search bar and type in Precepting, it'll pop up. I ask everybody this question. If you were in charge of nursing in Australia and could change one thing, what would it be and why?
Communication. The way that nurses communicate with each other. Queensland Health, from what I understand from permanent staff, have been pushing for risk mans for everything. And I know that facility managers are just overrun with all of these risk mans for like interpersonal problems.
Yeah.
Communication is, it's just one of those things that isn't really done well these days. If, you know, someone doesn't do something, instead of having a chat about it, it's risk manned. And it's, I mean, it's happened to me a number of times as well, where instead of like, you know, being like, oh, well, this. For me, and especially like team leading back in New Zealand, if something isn't done or done differently than how it should be, it's giving someone the benefit of the doubt. So it's even just saying, oh, I see this. What happened here? Giving someone the chance to explain their reasoning. Maybe it makes perfect sense in their mind. But just jumping on and risk manning, and I'm not sure risk manning is across Australia or not. It's just the incident reporting. Just communicating. Like, there's so many problems in facilities all throughout Australia that have seen, well, in the ones that I've seen, that just arise from people not talking to each other, or just snapping and not getting to the crux of like, sorry, I was mad. Like, I've got stuff going on at home, so sorry, I took it out on you. Like, but it's just little things about communication. I think it's just so undervalued now.
I would agree 100,000%. And do you have any final advice for nurses looking to go rural and remote agency nursing?
Be flexible. Be absolutely flexible in the places that you go and, like, what people are asking of you, just in terms of the facilities and that sort of thing. Like, if you get into a place and there's a whole lot of new stuff, it's not, you know, arcing up and getting your back up about, like, how everything is different. Embrace it. Get a new skill set. Learn how to use all the different little machines that they have. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is just go with an open mind, because it's, like, it's such an exciting adventure. I do not regret for a single second coming rural and remote. It's, like, it has its ups and downs, but it's been such a wild ride. I feel like I've ticked off most of Australian safari bingo by saying, like, I think I just have a platypus left.
Oh, really?
And a dingo camel. Yeah, dingo camel platypus, I'm pretty sure.
Have you seen any platypus?
No, there's platypuses all around the place here, apparently, but haven't seen them.
Wow.
Seen any echidna? That's awesome.
An echidna? Oh, yeah. I haven't seen one of those in ages. I think that's good advice, going out with an open mind. I think if you really want to do it, just do it. That's sort of my mindset when I'm going to do it. I'm just going to let the journey take me. And my very last question is, what's next for your career? Where can others get in contact with you? And you also wrote a book on everything we've just talked about.
Next in the career, not 100%, to be honest with you. I don't really know what I'm doing with my life other than just keep contracting for now. COVID's put a solid stop on pretty much most things in life. Definitely contracting for the next 2 years, and then back to New Zealand for a year, and then back to Australia. balance. I have actually considered doing my postgrad dip in masters, but to be honest, I don't really see, for me personally, the relevance of doing it in this context, other than having some more acronyms behind my name. And looking a bit more into doing sexual and reproductive health, because that's such a when you're doing rural and remote, you just come across these rampant cases in the community, and just the lack of sort of education around that is something I'm pretty passionate about. So not 100% is the short answer. Best way to get in contact. I've got a rural and remote Instagram page, which I'll send you a link through to. Otherwise just Facebook or and I did write a book, and it does need some amending, because I think I published it like November last year, and like anything, it's just you're always growing and evolving with life, with nursing, and especially this kind of nursing, you have all these new experiences, you're like, oh, people need to know about these things. Yeah, so it basically was aimed at New Zealand nurses coming over to Australia to do agency rural and remote, but to be honest, a lot of it does apply to Australian nurses already. For the Kiwi nurses, it's like how to get your APRA, how to get a bank account, or like the basic stuff, getting a super and setting yourself up to come over, picking agencies. And like I've got like a big a list of things on what to pack and what I'd recommend to pack. And yeah, going into the whole interpersonal skills on how to people in like certain situations that arise, like having issues with your managers, doctors, communication. Yeah, it sort of just kind of covers the whole crux of things,
Yeah, cool.
and a little bit on culture, but not as much as I would like. So I might actually have a look at some of that cultural stuff
Yeah, cool.
that Joy was talking about and pop some of that in.
I think that's probably a large part of it as well, because you're going to be going from New Zealand, and I mean, a lot of the cultures like into that doesn't exist. Apart, you have the Maori cultures and all those, but it's a very different sort of context, and the, I guess the clinical issues are different as well. So yeah, that'd be good to. Where can people find the book?
I will flick you a link. It is on Amazon. I don't know about the formatting, to be honest, but like all the contents and stuff is there. But yeah, it is on Amazon. I'm not sure about Apple users with Amazon, but or Kindle. Not 100% on that, but yeah, I think I did have a co-worker that was having trouble getting it because she had all Mac stuff. So I have a look
Okay.
into it. I think there is another platform that it's on that I need to look up. But yeah, looking at doing a printed version once I do some amendments and
Nice.
go from there.
Busy, busy.
Trying to be, aside from making all this jam.
Yeah, you're definitely going to be sending me some rhubarb. No, I'll come have to. I'm craving rhubarb now. I'm going to have to go buy some rhubarb. My mom used to make
All
a
the
wicked rhubarb and yogurt little fruit salad for breakfast. The best. So good. Well, thank you for joining. It's been awesome. I think we've covered a lot in 1 hour. I tried to fit into 1 hour. We've gone 17 minutes past that, but I think we did pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any final words, any comments? Are you ready to
Thank you for any
go relax?
If anyone's got any other questions or anything like that, just I think pop them on the your page that you've got there, and I'm happy to answer any questions anyone's got. Yeah, if you're thinking about it, get into it. It is so cool.
Yeah.
You can get up your frequent flyer points.
Woo.
How cool! But yeah, like such a wicked adventure. Definitely get into it. There's so much more than I think people think involved in it, and it's just like it's a
The
really
best.
cool way to get your passion back. I left New Zealand because I was burnt out and I'd lost my passion for nursing, and coming really remote, I definitely feel like I found it again. And communities are super cool. They're
I'm so keen.
awesome.
You've made me so keen to do it. I'll give you that. Can't wait.
Awesome adventure.
Yeah, so keen. Well, thank you once again. I'll let you go. And enjoy your Friday night. I'll put your links and everything so people can get in touch. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So yeah, goodbye.
Yeah.